Welcome to our first podcast of Charter Central, a podcast for education leaders. In this first podcast that we've recorded, you will hear from Corey Northrup, our executive director at the Center for Charter Schools at Central Michigan University. And we have an exciting conversation with Jim Gunner, the president and CEO of the National Charter Schools Institute. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Charter Central, a podcast for education leaders.
Welcome to Charter Central, a podcast for educational leaders, brought to you by Central Michigan University, the Center for Charter Schools, a leader in educational choice and quality. My name is Orlando Castellon. I am the Director for Board Governance at Central Michigan University, and I'm joined here in studio by my colleagues, Janelle Brzezinski and Jonathan Arnberg. Welcome.
Thank you, Orlando. We are excited to be embarking on this new format for partnering with our schools and offering insights from the special guests that we'll be talking to throughout the podcast. So as Orlando said, my name is Janelle Brzezinski. I'm our Director of Communications and excited to be starting this new podcast and seeing what kind of resources we can provide to those that will be listening.
Yeah, thanks for the introduction, guys. My name is Jonathan Arnberg. I do a number of different things for our organization, including new school development, working communications, previously worked in public policy, and I'm kind of the utility player of our organization, and I'm trying my hand at the podcast game, so appreciate it, and look forward to a successful year at the Charter Central podcast.
Yeah, so as Orlando mentioned, the podcast is certainly launched by the Center for Charter Schools at CMU, which we are all team members of. So the center is a function of the university who serves as a public authorizing body for charter public schools statewide throughout Michigan. So we're partnering with 57 schools for this new school year. We're really excited as the school year kicked off for many of our schools here recently. So we serve as an authorizer to provide that choice to families in the communities in which our partner schools serve. So we're really excited to be offering this in that role and the different resources of all the different aspects of what could be important topics to charter schools and what it takes to be a successful school.
Thanks, Janelle. And we are welcoming in studio our executive director, Corey Northrup. Good afternoon, Corey.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me here today.
And Corey, I was wondering, as we get started, there's probably some of our listeners that don't completely understand either what an authorizer is or what a charter contract is. So can you spend just a minute talking about your role as an authorizer and the charter contract?
Sure. So our role as an authorizer is really oversee and support the schools that we authorize. Every school that we authorize has a charter contract. They have different lengths depending upon their performance. It's part of our accountability model. So as an authorizer, we ensure that they're following all applicable laws, and then we evaluate their performance to determine their length of contract or if they continue to serve the students.
So really an authorizer also serves in a very supporting role, and obviously we feel strongly about the partnerships we have with our schools. Can you kind of speak to that aspect of authorizing and what we do to support our schools to offer these great opportunities for their students?
Sure. You know, as an authorizer, we wear a couple different hats. The first one by law is what I mentioned earlier about our oversight. But what we really look to do with our schools is help support them, because in the end, we're here to help the performance of the students in the state of Michigan. And so we do that through a handful of ways. One, we have our internal team where we have experts in academics and data and research, finance and governance. But we also work with the university, has a long history in teacher education and are full of experts in the area of academics. And so we look to use them and leverage their capabilities to help the performance in our schools.
So, Corey, you talked about what a charter authorizer is. Can you talk a little bit about what a charter school is?
Yeah, I think there's a couple ways to answer that. And I'm going to say, like, the charter school movement, what a charter school represents. And, you know, a lot of times we talk about in the forms of brick and mortar, but I really think we need to step back and say, you know, the movement was started to find a way to improve education for everyone. And that was going to be through different delivery models that were necessary for the needs in the local community. And so I think we really need to go back to that when we talk about what a charter school is. It's not, you know, this school on this corner or that school on this corner. It's ways to look to improve education. You know, charter schools, you know, and the talking points, you know, they're 100% tuition free. They're open to all students. A lot of them are looking for innovative and special specialty delivery models. You know, we have environmental science schools, we have online schools, project-based schools. And so it's really looking for ways to meet kids where they learn the best for them.
Why? So we want to be able to help the performance in our schools, and we're here doing a podcast. Can you talk a little bit about why this was an important initiative for the center to undertake?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about how people learn, there are like seven different models. And so certain people needs hands-on, some people are visual. So we're looking to give different methods to provide information to our schools. And this is another way that's, you know, kind of the new initiative, the new innovative ways to provide information.
Yeah, and we'll be providing this in a monthly segment, monthly episodes, and that will be available through our website at thecenterforcharters.org, where you can find many other resources, but we'll certainly have a landing page where you can find our monthly episodes. They'll be highlighting different topics, like we said, important to schools. We also will be able to have this out on iTunes, on Stitcher, on countless other platforms as well. So we look forward to having everyone listen along throughout the year as we really develop this out into monthly episodes that cover various topics.
Corey, so we've talked about partnerships and we've talked about new things, which reminds me that we have two new partner schools this year. Can you talk a little bit about our two new partner schools that we're working with and the opportunities that they bring to students in their communities?
Sure. We are always looking for ways to partner with schools that are going to bring an innovative approach, but we also see a very a large need demand in the community for that type of school. And so both of these schools that we're working with this year fit that bill. The first one is Ivywood Classical Academy in Plymouth. And we've actually worked with this group for the last several years to try to find the perfect location and match for the type of delivery model that they're providing at the school. The other school, Escuela Avancemos, is in Southwest Detroit, and they are a very community type feel school as well. They serve about 300 students currently in Detroit and are looking to continue to do that through the CMU family.
We also recently celebrated with our annual conference where we, for the first time, brought teachers into that conference space and provided content for them. Can you talk a little bit about the annual conference and some of the highlights from that event?
Yeah, you know, I've been with CMU for quite some time, since 2006. And so I've been to a few annual conferences. And this one had a very unique feel from any of the ones that I've participated in the past. And I think, you know, we talk about what we're trying to accomplish. The teachers are one of the biggest assets to get that done. In fact, that's where 90%, I would say, of the work gets done with the students. And so to have them involved and looking for ways to help them do their jobs, I think it was great. I got to spend some time in some sessions that the teachers were participating in, and the feel and the vibe and the excitement that was there really excited me as well to know that we were doing the right thing with trying to include teachers and tap into that university partnership as well.
Yeah, so speaking to the importance of teachers, certainly we know teachers have a tremendous impact on the students that they work with every day. So as we mentioned, we're going to have additional guests in our future episodes. One thing we plan on asking all of our guests, as this is a podcast for educational leaders, is wondering about a teacher that was important in your life and maybe the impact they had or somebody that sticks out to you during your time in school if you had a favorite teacher.
Wow, that's a tough question. There are so many to try to think about picking out one teacher. I think the one that sticks out in my mind was my fourth grade teacher, Mr. Hatfield. As it probably be a surprise to the people that I work with, I was a little bit of a rambunctious student when I was younger.
Surprise, surprise.
A lot of the teachers I had up into that time really looked to try to like confine me and put me in my spot and get me to sit in my seat. Mr. Hatfield allowed me to kind of use that to my advantage. He put me in some, gave me extra classes, or not classes, but subjects to research and do extra projects. He wanted me to do some advanced classes, and so didn't kind of like try to hold me back on that, but embraced the way that I learned. And helped me kind of use that as a strength as opposed to feeling like it was a weakness of mine. So I would have to say that would be the person.
Right. So we've been talking to Corey Northrup, the executive director at the Governor John English Center for Charter Schools. And we want to thank him for coming in today and chatting with us. And we will have another segment here shortly. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Charter Central. We want to welcome our first guest in studio here, Jim Gunner. Jim Gunner serves as the president and CEO of the National Charter Schools Institute and has been a longtime advocate for charter schools. And so we want to welcome Jim into studio. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks, Orlando. Fire up chips.
Fire up chips. We are reminded as we say fire up chips that Central Michigan University was the first university authorizer 25 years ago, and we are celebrating 25 years of charter schools. And as one of the early advocates for charter schools, can you tell us a little bit about when you started in charter schools and maybe what are some of the most pronounced memories you may have of those early days?
Well, that brings a smile to my face. One of the first introductions to charter schools was a guy named Dr. Robert Mills, and he said, "Jim, I've got an opportunity for you to get on the ground floor of something big in education." I said, "What is it, Bob?" He said, "I'm not going to tell you. Come to a meeting with me." So he took me to a meeting of the University Board of Trustees where they authorized 31 schools, April 1995. The next day, there was a seminar, and all the founders that had been approved were there. And I was excited to meet Lynn Wolf, and it ended up being Leonard Wolf. And Leonard Wolf was the attorney from Dykema that knew about the law and knew about charters and contracts. And I joined Bob's team when it was an office of three. And I had the privilege of working with the founders and the attorneys and putting those initial charter contracts together. And I believe the history records show 28 of those 31 opened that fall.
Wow. So in 1995, you joined the Center for Charter Schools, is that correct?
Yes.
And what do you recall? So you guys opened 31 schools that year or had chartered 31 schools. What was the number of schools that you guys had at that point?
Zero.
So zero to 31 in one shot.
Indeed.
That's incredible.
Indeed. Now, the technical history actually is that the original schools that were chartered under what we know as 6A of the law were found to be unconstitutional, and the legislature passed 6B of the law, and those schools were opened under 6B, and away we went. 3 years later, the Michigan Supreme Court found the original law constitutional, and now we've reverted back to that, and everybody knows charter schools from a technical standpoint as 6A of the revised school code.
And those were challenging times for some of those early charter schools that got opened. Can you reflect on what some of those early charter schools, the difficulties that they had, the challenges that they faced in reaching success in those early days?
It was all new. And so there was no guidance, expertise, startup funding, all of those things that come with it today. So it was some of the best of times because you were new. People were passionate, mission-oriented, and just so driven to prove that charters could exist. I'll never forget when October 20th came, the first day of state aid. Bob Mills took a check that the university received from the state of Michigan and blew it up and put it on his door. And he said, "Jim, do you know what that means?" And I said, "It's a check, Bob." And he said, "No, it means the system works."
Like a lottery check, like a large lottery check?
It was the days when people wrote checks. The state of Michigan sent the university a check. The university passed the money on to the academies. Now, millions of dollars get digitally processed the 20th of every month, and nobody thinks twice about it.
You eventually matriculated into the executive director of the Center for Charter Schools. You were there for how many years?
I served as executive director at CMU for 12 years. I had a stint in between where I went and helped found the Michigan Association of Public School Academies. And I love that. It was a great way to get into the government relations and public relations and serve as the unified voice for Michigan's charter school movement. And the great thing about it is Dan Quisenberry has taken that organization to a whole new level and is one of the most respected state leaders of charter school associations in the country.
Can you talk a little bit more about the Michigan Association Public School Academy, certainly the National Association of Charter School Authorizers as well, and your involvement in the founding of those and really what they meant to the movement at the time, the necessity of those, and kind of where we see them now today?
Absolutely. You know, it's all an evolution. So initially you get a law passed and then you're trying to educate people about the law, and then you get some people that are actually willing to do the work and try and create a school. But what we realized is that we could create great schools, but we were getting our teeth kicked in from a public relations and government relations standpoint. So that leads you to band together and say, hey, we need to have a unified voice. Let's put a membership group together and let's try and work together to get out our story and the truth and advocate for our interest. And so that happened at a local level in Michigan. And then it also started to evolve on a national basis. You can see that in two ways on the national level. One is the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, and the other one is the National Association of Charter School Authorizers. And Central Michigan University helped play a role in multiple ways with the formation and evolution of what I call the infrastructure of the charter schools movement. Those support organizations are critically important. The role I play today as the National Charter School Institute also was an organization helped spawn by Central Michigan University. So CMU has a rich history not only in chartering the first school in Michigan, being the first university authorizer in the country, but also one that's helped spawn a lot of other organizations that help promote and protect and advocate for the rights of parents to have quality educational options.
Well, and all of that focus that you had on supporting the idea of quality choice and options eventually led to, in 2010, you being inducted to the Charter School Hall of Fame. Can you talk a little bit about what that meant to you personally, having had put all that work in, and maybe a little bit about what that meant to your family?
Well, I was a baseball player, so I thought the Hall of Fame is something you got to if you were great and you retired. And so I used to joke with people. I'm like, I can't retire. I still got to work. And I'm not sure I'm deserving of it, but it was really the culmination of being with a great organization and a great team and accomplishing a lot of great things. And I had the honor of receiving credit of that as the executive director. But it was meaningful both personally and professionally. One is, you know, you want to have a big impact. And so to be involved on the ground floor of something big in education and have that opportunity was a real privilege. But it also was a way to honor Central Michigan University. And if you ever get a chance to see the video, it's about CMU and the schools and what the vision for authorizing was and is and continues to be. That's really the exciting part of it. There's some great privileges of it because each year when the Alliance hosts its annual conference, they get together the Hall of Fame inductees. So you get to talk and rub elbows with some very influential people from across the country from all sorts of backgrounds. And it really is fun to see the perspective that people bring to this that have really helped drive change. And, you know, I talk about charter schools as catalysts for excellence. And you can see that through the work of these people.
So you are currently, I think you indicated, the president and CEO of the National Charter Schools Institute. Can you talk a little bit about the mission of the National Charter Schools Institute. I think you had also mentioned it was an outgrowth of Central Michigan University. Can you talk a little bit about the evolution of your current role and the organization you're with?
Our mission as a nonprofit organization is to inspire, equip, and support the charter schools movement. And the reason we focus on that is there are lots of groups that do the advocacy, the government relations and the public relations we talked about earlier. But now that the laws are there and charter schools are real, so much of the work is actually implementation and execution. And so that's where we really specialize. We try and help people implement the idea. So we work with schools, we work with boards, we work with authorizers, we help try and encourage facility financing, rural development, urban development. But the things that actually help implement this idea well for kids and families and teachers and communities, that's what our core is.
Well, and we're celebrating 25 years of charter schools, and I'm reminded that as part of your work at the National Charter Schools Institute, you're also working on a library. A piece of history. Can you talk a little bit about that and where that work is at?
Yep. So at the Institute, we believe excellence knows no boundaries. And so one of the things we've tried to do is launch what we call the National Charter School Founders Library. We've started with governors and key legislative sponsors that helped pass the original laws, and we're collecting their primary source materials. We're also capturing their oral histories. The great thing about this project is that we all know that adage that one of the best ways to predict the future is to learn from the past. And so it's about excellence. It's about sharing. It's about capturing the history and letting people tell their stories.
And so the best way to predict the future is to understand the past. So when you look into your crystal ball, what does the future hold for charter schools? Where are our greatest challenges and where do we need to be focused as we continue into the next 25 years?
Great question. And as somebody that's been known as kind of the charter guy, I have maybe an unconventional answer. See, to me, it's not about charter schools. It's about excellence in education. It's about giving all kids access to the opportunities where they can get prepared to go achieve their dreams. And so charters are not only great schools, but chartering and the principles behind it are things that are going to lift the whole of public education. We used to talk a lot about the rising tide will lift all ships. That's what I believe, that's what we strive for, and that's what we want to see for everybody. We want everybody to win.
Jim, can you talk a little bit about in around 2010, 2011, an important milestone of the charter school movement was the lifting of the charter cap. Can you talk about what that meant to families and to authorizers experiencing that at the time?
Not only did it lift the cap, it eliminated the cap. And that's a key distinction because Michigan's law originally started without a cap, and then the legislature put one in, and then it bumped it up and bumped it up, and then it got eliminated. And it's a fascinating history because Michigan was actually heralded as one of the first states in the country to adopt, quote, a smart cap. And then when we eliminated the cap, people are like, whoa, you're going to have too much choice. But we actually believe that choice shouldn't be rationed, that where it made sense, where it could serve families, where it could provide educators with new opportunities, where it could help lift people up, why put a limit on that? And that we had these state public universities as one of the primary authorizing agencies in the state, that they could make these professional judgments and help people create great schools for their communities and families.
Well, that 2010 timeframe must have been an incredibly busy timeframe for you because not only were you being inducted into the Hall of Fame, the charter cap was lifted, but you were also working on your doctorate during that time frame. And we are reminded that we all should be calling you Dr. Gunner at this point. So,
well, I laugh when I hear that because I look for my father, but hopefully he's watching down from above with a smile. But, you know, I tell my kids the doctor's here when they get hurt, and they're like, ah, you're not that kind of doctor. But I did have a privilege of doing my doctorate at Michigan State University on the origin of Michigan's charter school policy. Go green and fire up chips. But the fascinating piece about the dissertation was just this. It focused on the policy, not the schools. And that was a big differentiator. And so if you think about chartering as a legislative strategy to improve public education, that's the origins of the idea from Ted Coldry in Minnesota. Governor Engler picked it up in Michigan. He was a policy entrepreneur. We think of entrepreneurs in the business sector, you know, tech company executives, but there's also policy entrepreneurs that are willing to take risks and they find windows of opportunity. And when that window of opportunity emerges, they're ready. And one of the things that everybody said about Governor Engler is that he knew more than anyone, even his top policy advisors. Why? Because he read more. He studied more. He would read the Constitution. My dissertation talks about Engler and Richard McClellan, constitutional attorney, and how on Sundays they'd be like, hey, did you read this in the Constitution? Yep. Well, does that trump this clause or that clause? They knew how state government worked, and they were able to use it to create opportunities. That was the birth of chartering, with Proposal A and the change in funding formula was also the same time that this idea that there could be more than one provider of public education and community.
And those opportunities now have had the chance to spread throughout the state with the lifting of the cap. Why do you suppose families and students choose charter schools?
Multiple reasons, but number one reason is they can talk to who's in charge. Parents want a school that's safe, that's friendly, that's responsive, and they can talk to the person in charge. This year, the Gunner family has a student in Renaissance Public School Academy, a charter public school, two in a Catholic school called Sacred Heart Academy, and one in Mount Pleasant Public High School, a public school district. Choice is so important to families because their kids are different, their reasons are different at different times of their development, and to have that choice is so powerful. And the last great thing about choice is whether or not you use it, you have it.
Well, it's definitely an important platform that we've provided to parents and students. The other partner in all of this is the authorizer. And Central Michigan University as an authorizer, and I think as you mentioned, 25 years in authorizing. But there's a special relationship between the authorizer and the school. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship and what it was when you were here and what you envision it being?
Central Michigan University paved the way by being the first authorizer in Michigan, the first university authorizer in the country, and it's done so much for the movement that we just can't say enough to the university for what it's done. But the thing that I think is the core to great relationships is a shared vision and values. And I just want to say that again, a shared vision and values. And then that's based on a relationship of mutual trust and respect. And then it's based on clear expectations, no surprises. That is the recipe for a great relationship between a school, a board, and an authorizer. And where that's happening, we're all pulling in the same direction. We're winning more for kids.
Well, and to celebrate those that time that you spent with us and your commitment to the charter schools movement, we had you back at our annual conference back in August. You participated with us. You were one of our lunchtime keynote speakers. Can you talk a little bit about being at that charter school conference and maybe some of the dialogue that you may have had as you engaged some of the participants?
Oh, it's an honor for me to always go back to the CMU events to see those schools. I used to call it the blood, sweat, and tears of the founders. They give so much to create these new schools and then to see them successful. And, you know, some of them now 25 years later, it's just, I call it the paycheck you can't cash. But the second thing that really strikes me as CMU celebrating 25 years is the firsts, right? So the public relations people always teach you, what are your first, only, and best? When you look at what CMU's done for the charter school movement, it's overwhelming. They launched MAPSA. They launched the Michigan Council of Charter School Authorizers. They launched the National Charter Schools Institute. They helped launch the Michigan Finance Authority. So many ways, so many things that the university's done, because they viewed this not just about CMU and chartering schools. They viewed it about improving public education. And so they helped build the infrastructure by which we're all benefiting.
And you talk about vision a lot, and certainly you just touched on this a little bit, but can you really speak to the vision and the pioneering vision that the university had to really step out and be that first, be the initial people to really take that step and move into the charter school movement?
So Sid Smith chaired the university board at the time. President Leonard Plakta was the acting president. And they had a vision, and that was that these were public schools, that they were going to be performance-based, they were going to be highly accountable, and that an institution that was founded in 1892 as a normal college to prepare teachers should be the one to lead the way, and that they were going to take the criticism, but they were going to stay the course because they thought this would be great for education, great for our state, great for our business community, and most importantly, great for teachers. They wanted teachers to have different options and opportunities where they could really be professionals and grow their craft.
And you really speak to that it's supposed to provide a better opportunity, a better environment for public education to make great schools. Over this 25-year span, what are some of the key things that you've seen that charter schools really were the pioneering push to get certain aspects into the public education sector?
There's so many, but let me just start with some very fundamentals. Before charter schools existed in Michigan, there was only one provider of public education in a community, the district. Now we think, hey, we've got choices, and isn't that a beautiful thing? Number two, you can no longer take students for granted. Before charters, you could take students for granted. You could take the money for granted. Whether they got educated or not didn't really matter. With charters, people choose to come. The money follows. You have to produce results in order to keep your charter. It's a beautiful thing. Number three, we now have schools that have boundaries that are the state of Michigan. So anywhere you live in the state, if you want to go to that school, you can by choice. Nobody has to permit you. So we moved from an era of assignment to an era of choice. It's changed the paradigm. More practically, things like all-day kindergarten were told impossible. Charters pioneered that. Now look at how many people are doing it. Charters have really taken a lead in some of the cyber and blended education. Giving communities where you can't have a school for lots of different reasons, but you can now access it with technology. The other thing that's really just absolutely amazing to me is that you can do these schools without them levying taxes. You see, a charter public school has no authority to levy taxes. They're prohibited by law. So they're having to be very efficient to do their facilities and their operations with simply the state foundation grant. So when we talk about effective and efficient, we've got to be both, and that's a healthy balance.
Well, and we can talk about effective and efficient, and we can also talk about moving from good to great, which was something during your time in the office at the Center for Charter Schools that we heard you talk about a lot. And Jim Collins was an author that we heard you repeat time and time again. Tell us why that was important to you.
I love Jim Collins, and I love Good to Great, and I love particularly the Good to Great for the nonprofit sector, because Collins is crystal clear what greatness is. It's a journey, and great organizations deliver superior results. They have a distinctive impact on their mission and their audience, and they have lasting endurance. And those are the qualities that we wanted to exhibit as Central Michigan University, but those are the qualities that we wanted the schools we chartered to exhibit. And so as an old baseball player, you always say, hey, whether I'm the player or I'm the coach, when it's time for me to leave the team, great leadership means that team plays even better without me. Because you put the process, the systems, the culture, the things in place where it thrives and has that lasting endurance. It's aspirational. And see, charters weren't just supposed to be about schools. They were supposed to be about advancing excellence for everybody. And I believe that you got to model the way. And it's what I love about Collins' work.
Well, and we've certainly, as we're celebrating 25 years, that lasting impact is moving into the next generation. We're seeing a lot of the students that have graduated going on to be successful in college, work, and life. And what is your vision for the future then of having this impact continue for many years to come?
I want each and every kid that goes to a school in Michigan to have the absolute best opportunities to pursue their passions. And not just pursue them, but be prepared academically to go achieve them. And to the extent that happens in a charter school, fantastic. But to the extent that chartering pushes all schools to be able to make that possible, even better. Because our goal is for every kid in every school to win.
Jim, I have a question for you. Considering, you know, your work
with the Institute as a, you're very nationally well-respected. You present at national conferences, and you have a lot of perspective in and about the charter sector in states all around the country. Are there any things that you think that Michigan might be able to learn from other states or other organizations that we might be able to bring back to our state, or some unique parts of charter laws or charter organizations in other states that we might be able to model off of in the future?
Absolutely. We're always learning and growing, right? And we're educators. That's what we're supposed to be doing. But one of the unique things about Michigan's law that's different virtually than any other state is that these are governmental entities. The board members swear constitutional oath of office. They are public schools, and they are governmental units. And that standard is different. In most other places, charter school boards are nonprofit organizations. Where in Michigan, they are public officials and they have a constitutional duty in office. And so that distinction really ties the authorizers and the boards together. As you know, Central Michigan University's Board of Trustees appoints the members that serve on these boards. And that ability to have a shared vision and values, a relationship of mutual trust and respect, and clear expectations so nobody's surprised, is really one of the reasons that as we look at lasting endurance, Michigan's model, I believe, is going to shine and be a lesson for others.
Well, we appreciate your time today, Jim. One last question, and we want to have a little bit of fun with this. Had some folks in the office, and they wanted to ask you this question. As a father of seven, would you rather have your kids be good or smart?
Good. And we have a lot of fun with that. I ask that question to audiences around the country. And we want them to be good. We want them to be good students. We want them to be good citizens. We want them to be good friends. We want them to be good neighbors. We want them to be good spouses. Good is so important. And yes, the reality is we always want our kids to be smart and good. But if you only have to pick one, the answer absolutely is good.
Well, we want to thank Jim Gunner from the National Charter Schools Institute for joining us today and providing us with some of his time. And we will be back shortly. Welcome back to Charter Central, a podcast for education leaders. We just finished with our first podcast and had some awesome guests. Corey Northrup, our executive director at the Center for Charter Schools at Central Michigan University, and Jim Gunner, the president and CEO of the National Charter Schools Institute. So our first two interviews, guys, how did we do?
I thought it was really interesting to hear the perspective of Dr. Gunner being on the front of the movement and really pioneering what it means to not only offer those options to kids, but what it means to be an authorizer and to do that well and how that can support schools. So really a neat perspective of hearing his historical reference to a lot of the milestones that he was a part of making happen.
Yeah, he was a part of a lot of that and had an opportunity to lead at a time where there wasn't a lot of leadership in this space. So, Jonathan, what's your thoughts on our first episode?
Well, from my perspective, I think having the opportunity to interview your boss is something that you should absolutely take up. And I advise any of our listeners, if you have the opportunity to do that, don't pass that up, because it was great to be able to hear from Corey on his perspectives, as well as all of the different things we're going to be able to provide you and the rationale for entering in this podcast space. But with Dr. Gunner being somebody that is kind of a history buff, but at the same time, I've only been working for CMU for about 6 years now. So I'm a baby in the charter school space at this point compared to some of these other folks. And being able to hear that perspective and what things were like back 25 years ago, thinking of, opening 30 schools at once when being in the new school space, we're just opening two this year. And I can't imagine just the dichotomy between 25 years ago and now. It's just fascinating.
Well, certainly times have changed, and we need to keep our eye on the ball as things continue to change. But Very much appreciate the opportunity to interview Dr. Gunner and Corey Northrup. And we're also excited about future podcast episodes and looking forward to bringing additional content and folks to interview into this space. If any of our listeners have recommendations on folks that they'd like to hear, please let us know so that we can get them included in the future. Thank you for listening, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again soon.